You are listening to the Mindset Forge podcast, where athletes and performing artists discuss their biggest moments and mindset shifts that made them so successful. High-level athletes and performing artists understand how to show up for the big moments, how to be present and on point when everything counts. That's what I want to find out about, and that's what I want to help understand so that we can take some of those amazing nuggets and implement them in our own lives. I'm your host, Barton Bryan, and I'm an athlete. I'm a fitness coach. I'm a former actor and singer, and I love helping people discover their fullest potential. In this episode, I interview Rosetta Plummer, an IFBB professional bodybuilder in the bikini division. We definitely talk about how she became a pro bodybuilder, some of the struggles she had growing up, but also how she shows up now, mentally and physically, for the big performances or competitions in her case. She breaks down some things you should do and shouldn't do that will help you be more successful, more focused, and the best version of yourself. There's some great takeaways here, especially on how to clear your life of things that are distracting and potentially negative. Before I kick off this interview, a word from our sponsor, Mantra Labs. They're a new nutrition brand right here in Austin, Texas. One of the main themes of my podcast has always been proper nutrition and recovery are paramount to getting the results and progress that we're looking for with that sport we're playing or at the gym or whatever we're doing. A huge part of that is actually hydration. And let me tell you, I'm absolutely head over heels with Mantra Labs' new hydration drink. This thing is a game changer with 1,200 milligrams of broad spectrum electrolytes, plus 72 trace minerals, prebiotics, and vitamins. It comes in two great flavors too, lemonade and fruit punch. Normally, I'm all about the lemonade, but Mantra Labs might just have the best tasting fruit punch on the market, and I've tried them all. As a big guy, I drink 130 to 160 ounces of water a day. So if I can get some plant-based broad-spectrum electrolytes with that water, bam, that is a huge recovery and performance win for me. I've absolutely noticed a difference with the Mantra Labs Hydrate formula, and I would recommend it to anyone. Check out Hydrate or any of their line. So go to gomantralabs.com and use the discount code MINDSETFORGE to save 25% at checkout. All right, back to the show. Well, Rosetta, thanks so much for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm like excited to have this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to share your story and ask you lots of questions, but let's get into bodybuilding because for a lot of people, they're thinking Arnold Schwarzenegger, these massive men and women that just look so big and so muscled. Give us kind of an understanding of bodybuilding today and the various categories and divisions and things so that our audience can kind of listen and understand a little bit better about what the variety of bodybuilding is for now.
Right. To be honest, when I started looking into bodybuilding, I didn't even realize women took part in it at all. I thought of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jay Cutler, people like that. So I never really thought of women being part of bodybuilding. As far as like the women's goes, there's so many different divisions. And now they just introduced wellness, which is a big deal. There's so many different organizations within bodybuilding, but the only one that I'm familiar with is NPC.
NPC is really the amateur kind of bodybuilding federation that leads you to become a pro in the IFBB. The IFBB has Mr. Olympia, Miss Olympia, yeah. Arnold Classic, the real like major leagues of bodybuilding.
Right.
So all the different categories relate to IFBB, which is where the NPC kind of leads into.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the only way that you can get to those stages, like the Olympia, which is coming up, the Arnold is this weekend. So if that's your goal to get on one of those stages, NPC would be where you would start.
Yeah. So talk about the different divisions. You mentioned wellness, there's fitness, physique. Yes. Talk about that in a little bit.
So
just in the context of women's bodybuilding.
So there's bodybuilding, there's physique, fitness, figure, bikini, and now wellness. I think we could all know what bodybuilding as far
the
as
the kind of traditional, yes, very big muscles.
Yes. And then there's physique, which they're a little bit smaller, they're longer. And then figure, to be honest with you, I wouldn't even be able to tell you the difference between the two because when they both step on stage, I'm still like, okay, where?
They're pretty close.
Yes, yes. And then fitness, that's more like gymnast. They're very acrobatic on the stage. Definitely a lot of muscle in order to carry them doing those flips and one-handed push-ups, and
they have a full routine. Like,
yes,
they're not just standing on stage posing. They're going through a routine with flips,
music, and
all these various intense fitness movements. Yeah.
Yeah. And they do a whole getup, you know, shorts that you would wear at a gym and a cute top. And they, some of them wear makeup. Yeah.
It's big, straight performance.
Yes.
Yeah. in the show notes is I'll post a YouTube video of a fitness contestant doing a performance so that everybody can see what you're talking about. Okay, talk about your division, bikini. Okay.
So bikini, the only way I can really define bikini is symmetry. You have to have S shape in the body, but definition, muscle tone. We do certain poses. There's that front pose, the side pose, and the back pose. Those are where they really want to zone in on symmetry. The muscle mass up top needs to be symmetrical to the muscle mass on the bottom. That's pretty much bikini. All the glam as well. Nice. All the glam.
I think that helps get a better picture. Now, within the category of bikini, just to help our audience understand, there's different categories. Yes. Talk briefly about that.
We're broken up by height. You've got your true novice, you've got your novice, you've got open, and then masters. And so true novice is if you've never, ever stepped on stage before. That's fairly new. I don't think that's been around very long. And then novice.
So your first show.
Yeah, this is the first time
you're a true novice.
Yes. Yes. All the nerves and all the beginnings of learning everything all in one. And then novice is if you've competed before, but you haven't placed top three. But COVID changed everything. Last year, they moved it to top five. And then there's open, which is everybody. Whether you've placed or not, you're competing anywhere from the young 18-year-olds all the way to 45, 55-year-old women that are coming out to show what they have. And then masters. That starts at 35. And then they have the 35, 45, 50, 55, and up. And
Right. So you can potentially be a true novice, mm-hmm. also a novice, yep. also open, and also one of the masters.
Yes.
And actually, if you're 50, you could be in 35. Several, 35, 45,
yep.
and so you can be in multiple classes in a sense.
Right.
And then of course your height is also a factor.
Yeah.
And I know with certain physique, it's height, weight.
Yeah.
In order to be able to compete in certain physique competitions, you have to have a kind of a proportional height to weight ratio.
Yeah. That and that's more of the bodybuilding figure. They're the ones who calculate weight.
Right.
We don't have to worry about that, thankfully. Yeah. Okay. It'll open a whole nother door.
Yes. So you're in bikini. Is there any chance you might move up to one of the other categories that has a little bit more muscle, or is this your kind of zone?
Bikini is my zone. I admire the women that can come in at figure or physique or bodybuilding, but that bikini would be where I'd stay at. I'd need a lot more.
Right. Putting on muscle, man or woman, after your 20s is a challenge. But if you're doing that naturally too, that's also a big piece of it too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Okay. So one of the things that, if you look at bodybuilders and physique athletes and people that choose this kind of lifestyle to compete at this level, it takes immense mm-hmm. discipline and just focus and really being able to say no to so many foods and have such a kind of organized schedule around fitness and around eating and sleep and all that kind of stuff. What are some of the habits that you have as an IFBB pro that really make you able to compete at this level that you feel like people should understand that might want to do what you do?
I'm very routine oriented. I like to have a routine. I like to have not necessarily a schedule, but pretty much the same thing every day. And when it comes to prep, being in prep, routine is where it's at. You have to build a routine. You have your meals prepared and know that your time and energy is going to be spent either in the kitchen creating meals or in the gym, pushing. So you have to be able to understand that in prep, you're going to have to let go of a lot of, there's a balance, but there definitely is a balance where that part of your life is going to pull you more in that direction, where some of the other things that you do and your normal day-to-day basis are going to have to be put on the back burner.
Yeah. And 12 weeks out from a show, that's when everything, the laser focus has to truly start to come into.
Yes.
Where you're cutting the calories back and you're focused a little bit differently on your cardio and weight loss and all that kind of stuff, getting ready for that physique show.
Yeah. Cause you have your calories come down, your cardio may go up depending on your physique, obviously. And then you're spending an hour in the gym just on your training alone. And then you've got your cardio, and that can go anywhere from, depending on your physique, but you can go from 20 minutes. There's people who have to do 60 minutes and even more. I've heard more than that. It just really depends on your physique at that time and where you're at. And then you have to take the time to prep your meals, and you have to stick to the meals and meal timing and cutting out variables and being able to say no. I think as time goes on, you definitely find a handle on things when you're in prep. But when it gets easier in some areas, it gets harder in others.
It's a rabbit hole of negativity or body image. One of the challenges with this industry is I think people who are already have a kind of a destructive way about handling their nutrition or workouts and things like that can kind of get into a really unhealthy place. How do you find that equilibrium where you're focused, you've got your discipline, you got your routine down, but it's not taking over your life or it's not sending you down kind of a negative validation-minded mindset?
So a couple things that I do as I get closer to shows, I kind of cut out social media. That's where the comparison begins. We all tend to follow, you know, the pros and we want to be at that level. And it's great. It really is great to have that visualization. But as I get closer, for me personally, it's better not to have that in front of my face. Another thing is find yourself a good coach, somebody that you're able to really say, hey, this week I'm feeling this, or I'm starting to compare. The biggest thing is comparison. Don't compare yourself. Your body is going to do different things than the next person next to you. So definitely don't compare. For me, I always ask myself, I know my week. I know what my days hold. So if I can set myself up the day before or the week before for the following week, the small variables that come in between are really not going to mess with you outside of the things you can't control. So control what you can in prep, which is your nutrition and your training. So control those two things and cut out anything that brings you any sort of negative thoughts, any rabbit holes, like going out, any of that stuff. Don't do it. Not in prep.
I like that. We fill our heads, especially with social media, with comparisons and they look so good, right? And like, we don't even know when that picture was taken, right? You know what I mean? You see a picture like, man, they're at like 8% body fat. I'm at 11. Like, I'm not, but that could have been taken a year ago. We don't know those things, but we tend to infer from looking at that kind of stuff.
And it's hard not to in bodybuilding in general, I'm sure. But right now with these women that are going to Olympia and getting ready to step on the Arnold right now, you're looking at these women like, wait a minute, they're a few days away from stepping on stage when you're not there yet. So you've got some time.
Right. And if they're going to the Arnold Classic, they've been doing this a while. Because the Arnold Classic, for y'all who don't know, really the Olympia has always been the Super Bowl of bodybuilding. But one step below, and maybe a very small step below, is the Arnold Classic. It's one of those qualifiers for the Olympia that is, if you win the Arnold Classic, you're probably getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in
top,
the Olympia.
Top five.
You're
that
high level. So big deal that they're back to back in the next 2 weekends.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to watch that.
Yeah. So take us back to growing up in Escondido, California, outside of San Diego. What do you remember about that time and some of the challenges that your family faced growing up?
So I was raised by a single mom. It was just my sister and I were about 5 years apart. And then we lived with an aunt as well. My mom worked two jobs and raised us the best she could. And yeah, we loved it.
Yeah, just that single mom, two jobs, two kids, that type of work ethic. And just, so you probably, even though you didn't realize at the time, probably were seeing just hard work, discipline, routine happening from your mom at that time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she definitely set an example. If you want it, you need to work for it. Anytime she would leave, it was, you know, we had chores, we had things that we were required to do before we could go anywhere. We had to be in the house at a certain time. So she definitely kept her thumb on us while working to keep us afloat.
So 15 years old, you get pregnant.
Yes.
And everything changes.
Yes.
Because you really have to grow up then.
Yes.
Talk about that time. Talk about that experience and what you remember about yourself at that time.
I had my daughter at 15. It was scary. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty scary. I mean, there's this whole story behind that. But we ended up, our family went through quite a bit during that time. And the pregnancy was just added to everything. But we ended up in Long Beach, California, with some family. And that's where I had my daughter. And so at that time, it was my mom being my mom was, I will help you. And I will help you raise her, but you will stay in school. You will finish school. So again, she's putting her thumb on us and making sure we continue what we need to do to become adults. So, and it was more or less like, I'm just going to be here. You're going to raise your child and you're going to finish out school. So yeah, I had her 5 days before I turned 16.
For so many kids that have kids at such a young age, it becomes the thing that stops them from achieving or being successful in life. Like they have to give up their course to take care of the kid. Like, do you remember thinking or making a decision at that time about like how you were not going to be a statistic or how you were going to think differently or do things differently?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So in Long Beach, the statistics of ending up pregnant as a teenager is pretty high. So there was a lot of outlets, but there were a lot of wait lists to do anything. There was a high school out there that, you know, you could have childcare, but there was like a 2-year wait list. And so everywhere we went, there was either something like that or somebody who made a comment as in, you know, my mom would be like, oh, Rosita's pregnant. And you would get that look like, you poor thing, or comments of like, well, what are you going to do now? Maybe you should look into adoption. Things that just felt like, man, she hasn't even gotten here and we don't have a chance. Like, we have no chance. And even after giving birth to her, they would have a social worker come in and she would ask questions that just I had never experienced, but it put such an impression on me as a person that I was like, I never want to judge somebody because of statistics. So the questions were, do you have running water? Do you have food in your pantry? Do you have an income? Just those things that I'm sitting there holding a baby thinking in my mind, we still have no chance and we haven't even started living and I haven't even tried to raise her yet. And you're already putting a wall up, like closing the door on me.
Yeah. I guess those are questions they have to ask, you know, like in retrospect, you look back, they probably just have to check the boxes.
Right.
But the feeling you're getting from that social worker is like, you got no shot.
Right.
You're rock bottom.
Yeah.
And you're like, what do you mean? I haven't even failed yet. I'm doing good. You got a whole family to support this.
Right.
Before we go on, you mentioned something that happened around that time when you were in Escondido. Is that something that you could share?
So, yes, I had a very good friend at the time that took advantage of a situation, and that's how I ended up pregnant with Autumn. Okay. And so.
And she's how old now?
She is 20.
Oh my God.
My goodness. And amazing. She's an amazing. I love my daughter. She's amazing.
Yeah. All those things that happen at the time, you know, all the decisions you have to make, and fast forward 20 years, you know, like everything was worth it, right? Like,
right.
You have this beautiful daughter. She's 20. She's an adult. You've
successfully
launched her in a sense, into life. And
yeah. Even looking back, I was a young mom. So everything was brand new. I mean, now the decision she's making in life, I'm like, okay, I'm hoping I had an impression on her to do the things she's doing or be so strong as she is to do the things she does now and make the choices she's making now.
So. There's a lot of teenagers who just make bad, they're out doing drugs and drinking on the weekends, and they're just, you know, kind of going out and experimenting with sex and all that kind of stuff. And it's different when something like that happens.
Yeah.
And you have to really just stop and figure your life out and decide what you're going to do.
Yeah. And I think the having the support I did helped a lot. In Long Beach, met some young girls at that time that had no support. And it just, even though I was raising my daughter on my own, I wasn't on my own. I had my mom. I had my aunts. I had so many people still supporting me that it was easier in a sense. Yeah. It was still hard, but easier.
Well, the expression, it takes a village.
Yes.
You truly had a small village there.
Absolutely.
And moms and aunts are sometimes the most important people to have around.
Oh, yeah. The grandparents. I mean, I could probably ramble on about all of them, but yeah.
So fast forward, you moved to San Antonio, you're married.
Yep.
There's a lot of life in there that we're skipping over, and I apologize. I want to get us back to kind of what you're up to, because in the world of bodybuilding, which is amazing, but also a life coach and really like living this very passionate, positive, purposeful life that other people can see and not just appreciate, but, you know, get guidance from you, which is awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Let's talk about moving to San Antonio. You're married, kids on the way. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we decided to make the move to San Antonio right before 2015. So 2014. And in that decision, after we had decided to tell the whole family we were moving to San Antonio, we found out we were pregnant. So I moved out here when I was 3 months pregnant, July of 2014. And then I had my son in January of 2015.
Now, you weren't an athlete growing up.
No.
Were busy.
Yes.
So you weren't an athlete growing up. Talk about fitness coming into your life and how that transitioned you into getting into bodybuilding.
After I had my son, I kind of hit like a little bit of a depression. I had no family out here. It was just us. My husband obviously was working. So it was literally me and my son and my daughter. But my daughter was in school. So it was me and my son. 4 to 6 months, I had to find an outlet. And I found story time with your baby. And then that's where I met some mom friends. And one of my friends introduced me to another friend who was starting a Mommy and Me boot camp in the park. And it kind of led from there. I mean, truly and honestly, when I started, it was like, I just want to have mom friends.
I'm here for the friends.
I'm here for the friends. I could care less about working out. My friend that led the group, she did amazing. And it really just became part of my everyday. It was something I looked forward to. And then, yeah, fast forward to 2017 when her husband got into bodybuilding and she kind of introduced us to the world of bodybuilding. And then she said she was doing a show and it kind of piqued my curiosity. I'm like, wait, women bodybuild? And then I'm thinking, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I'm like, you're going to get really big. She's like, no, no. And so she introduced us to it. And us, when I say us, I say the group of us that all kind of partook in her boot camp. But I really just wanted to see what was going on. It's like, all right, I need to find out what all this is about. And so we went to shows and she challenged me and I finally gave in and said, okay, I'll do one. I'm only going to do one show. And that's where it all led.
Yeah. And you've done 12 shows.
Yeah. Right? Since 2018. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. And that's a lot of shows in 3.5 years or so.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about that first show. I mean, true novice, like yes. We learned earlier. Talk about kind of leading up to the show and that show itself, the experience, the nerves, and just the excitement of it all.
So being a newbie, I felt, I guess, so nerves for sure. I was super nervous. Super nervous. Leading to the show wasn't too bad. I was kind of on a high, I guess, because I was so in a hurry to get to the stage. Like, okay, let's get there. Like, I'm putting in the work. Every time I would take my check-in photos, it was kind of exciting. My first prep was hard nutrition-wise, but the training-wise, this was all new. I loved that I was in a gym. I loved that I was weight training. The nutrition part was hard. So that was a whole new ball game. And that's where the struggle was for me in my first prep. And then May 5th of 2018, I won't forget it. That was my first show. The Southeast Texas. Oh, I can't think of where it was. It's outside of Houston in a little town. It was a good show. It was a small town show. So that is where I benefited from because it wasn't such a bit large scaled show.
Talk about walking on stage for the first time. Because this is a podcast about athletes and performing artists. And like I mentioned to you, I really feel like the elements of bodybuilding are a combination of both. Mm-hmm. You are definitely an athlete because of all the work and the discipline that takes you to that moment where you step on stage. But when you're on stage, there is a performance element to being a competitor, posing and winning the show. So talk about the performance aspect, not just from the first show, but kind of as you understand it now.
Yeah. So posing is a big part of bikini world and all the divisions, obviously, but bikini is very focused on that front pose, that side pose and that back pose. So you have to really practice that posing in your heels a lot because walking on that stage and you're presenting yourself posing, you want to present that front pose to where they can see what you worked for and then see what they're looking for. They're looking for that symmetry. They're looking for that even muscle mass on the top, smoothness into the bottom. So every pose that you do really has to transition and show your physique and the symmetry that comes. So if you watched a competition, you'd see that we kind of do our posing a little bit different. And most of us do the same poses, but we present it a little differently.
Yeah, you've got to accentuate your best aspects of the side and the back and the front, right?
So yeah, and the movement
you have to know where your weak spots are so you can hide them.
Yes, absolutely. And the movement, you want to walk out there, you know, high, any little movements. If you're walking out there slumped and you're not high-chested, like every little movement jiggle. I mean, I've had 2 kids, so there are still certain areas that, you know, jiggle. So you have to really like hold it up. and present it to them without creating any movement outside of the movement they right. need to see.
Creating the illusion that like everything's tight, everything's yes. flawless.
And that's where the tanning and all of that comes right. into.
But I think also too, like confidence.
Yes.
You know, I got to see a NPC show in Austin here a couple months ago, and just the way they walk on stage, the way they carry themselves, even if they're not posing, if they're just standing back waiting mm-hmm. to be introduced, how you carry yourself with your aura on stage. I think all those things play in because it is truly a subjective sport. Let's be honest. Like the judges really decide what type of physique they're looking for that on that day.
Oh, for sure.
Right. And so you go to one show, they might be looking for something. You go to another show, new judges, and it may not be.
And it all depends on who shows up too.
Competition.
Yeah, the posing is key. So you want to walk out there and you want to look like you know what you're doing. Like I always say, if you cannot do your posing in your sleep, then you're not posing enough. And my coach will say it too. You should be practicing all as many times as you can all the time. Even now, and that includes off season. A lot of us think we're off season or we're improvement season, so we're gonna put our heels up and
improvement season. I like that. It's a better off season feels like you're eating pizza.
Yes, improvement. We gotta still carry that over. Yeah. So yeah.
Let me ask you this, because I really feel like one of the hardest things to conjure up is confidence. And I'm putting mm-hmm. quotes around confidence because you can't really fake confidence. Like how do you think about like the work you've put in and where you are when you're about to walk on stage so you can really be your confident self? Because if your confidence comes from like how many, you know, people clap for you, that kind of validated confidence,
right?
That's a bad place to be.
Yeah, for sure. And I can tell you firsthand, almost every single one of my shows outside of maybe the first two, I had nobody in the audience. Or maybe one or two that just knew me, but mm-hmm. they were there maybe for somebody else. So yeah, you can't live off of the claps and the woos. And I mean, I've heard horns and cowbells and all sorts of things being for other competitors. I've been to shows where they've said, oh, the judges need to hear your number so they'll look at you. I mean, I've had nobody.
You've so won with no one in the audience. So let's be clear, guys.
And that can help build your confidence right there. Like, hey, I've been in the top five without anybody screaming my number or a whole audience. Back to your question, coming out in that confidence, two things I do to zone in before I step on stage because I get nervous. I do two things. Two, I ask myself, why am I doing this? And what person am I portraying up there? And two, what if I work so hard to do this moment? You get 10 seconds. Sometimes less than 10 seconds, 10 seconds to show. So why not show it all? Why not come up there, chest up, smile, move and show them like, hey, I worked for this. I worked hard for this.
Literally years of work for 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
That's it's like a bullfighter.
Yes.
8 seconds on a bull. That's all you got. I mean, wow. And maybe at the Olympia level, the prejudging and there's a lot more posings. There's a lot more time on stage to kind of differentiate yourself.
And pros. But, the pros get a little, I think it's like 30 seconds.
Right. Right. But in the amateur, you got so many people coming through.
Yeah.
You got 10 seconds, get up there, hit your three sides, you know, side, front, back.
Yeah.
And then.
And so I've been to shows where they tell you, like, if you're not done in 10 seconds, we're getting the next girl out.
Yeah.
And they rush you sometimes.
They got a big hook that they grab you and pull you off the stage. Well, talk about you're going to walk out routine mm-hmm. and then you're put into the finals, mm-hmm. right? Because you've won several shows, including last year you became a pro. Mm-hmm. And so talk about that moment where it's like the pose down or like that final moment to convince the judges that like you're their lady.
And this last one, the one I won, they had us do comparisons first, which was interesting. So we came out, we lined up. There were 23 of us. So they had a split up. We came out, I think it was like 7 or 8 at a time. They lined us up. They had us do our front, side, back pose. And then they said, okay, ladies, step off the stage. And then we got to come back up and do our 10-second routine individually. After we were done, they had you line up diagonally on the side, and then they would call your numbers out. That kind of tells you if you're first call out, second call outs, third, and so on. And if you're past third, you know you're, unfortunately, you probably feel a little deflated, but.
So if you're past the third call out, that probably means you didn't
make the top. Not top 10 at least. Okay. Yeah. And so, yeah, standing there, they just start calling numbers and you line up. That's when they start doing the big comparison. So first call outs, they'll start. And that's when you kind of figure who top five is.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they'll move people around too. They'll be like, you know, 23, stand next to, go to the right of 21. And
they'll have you do it over and over again, front, back, front, back. They'll have you walk to the back a little bit, come back, turn around, come back up. And they'll rotate you until they have you in the position that you're placing is pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, I've been to shows where they've switched it, but if you're in the middle, you're more than likely first.
Yeah, because they want to see kind of your best competition right next to you on either side so they can say.
Yeah.
You win the show last year, which gives you that pro card in a sense. Like you become an IFBB pro bikini competitor. Mm-hmm. Talk about that moment where your name is called, your overall Masters bikini champion. What was that like?
Oh, man. I still laugh because I had no idea at all that I was going to get my pro card. And most, based on seeing other competitors backstage, when they get their placings for comparison, they come off and you see them, they're excited. And she's going to get her pro card later tonight. I had no idea. I thought for sure I was second. And the entire time talking to friends and family in between prejudging and finals, I was like, that's okay. I'm second. I was already looking at other shows, other national shows, in between thinking,
scrolling your phone, looking for another show to do.
Yes. And even speaking to my coach, she just didn't tell me I got, and she knew, she said she knew.
She knew you won?
Yeah.
She didn't want to hint to it in case.
Yeah. Just in case, because, you know, they have had where you switch.
You never know until your name is called. There's always politics involved in things, too, that you have to be aware of.
Oh, yes. And so standing, I mean, if you saw the video, you'd probably laugh because so what happens is when you come back to finals, they pull the top five to the side. Mm-hmm. They have everybody else go get their last chance on stage to pose. And then they have us come out. And so they had us come out, line up diagonally.
So you knew you were top five.
Yes.
That's good.
Yes. Yes. And then they started calling one by one, you know, starting from fifth down. When we were in line, the girl that I assumed won first, she seemed very confident in herself and just had this aura that she knew she won.
Right. Like she had a secret that nobody else knew.
And so in my mind, I'm like, okay, see, we're at second. It's okay. And so getting onto stage, they called all the numbers and they called hers as second runner up. And I mean,
not even first runner up?
No. So in you hear me say, or you see my mouth say, oh, and not that I'm a big cusser, but I was in my mind, I'm like, oh, shit, that means that's my number.
You dropped the SH bomb right there.
Like. Yeah, I didn't know what to do with my hands. I wanted to thank the Lord. And it really, truly was like tunnel vision after that. You come off stage, you know, they have you take all these pictures with the top five, and then they have you stand over to the side to do overall. And in the entire moment, I'm like, I just want to talk to my family.
And you want to share the moment.
Yes. Yeah. And I still couldn't believe, I kept telling my friend that was standing next to me, that really happened. So,
yeah. Well, and you have your coach, but the whole pursuit of bodybuilding is a very solitary pursuit. Like, but you have a family, two kids, a husband. How do you manage being a great mom, being a great wife, and having another job and doing all these things? How do you do it?
Trial and error, just like parenting. A professional that I follow, Monica Ellis, one time said, when you're in prep, and it really put an imprint on me, when you're in prep and you're at the gym, that's your time at the gym. When you're at home with family, that's your time at home with the family. And so as time went on, as every prep went on, I found ways to make sure that when I was home, even though I had to have my meal and eat that meal, we would maybe choose a restaurant where it could be outside and I could bring my food with me. Or I would make sure I always had meals ready to put you saw my lunch pail when I came in.
Yeah.
So that if we were to do anything later or outside, or that wouldn't take away like, oh, well, I have to go home to get my meal or anything like that. And that was all trial. There were times that I would go without or because I didn't realize like, oh, I need to have that stuff prepared.
Right. So just being as proactive as possible.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's probably the hardest thing for people to do. I mean, whether it's meal prep or social media, can I just put the phone down, be present with my kids? When I'm at the gym, I am so present, right?
Yes.
Which is what you're saying. Be present in the moments you need to be present.
Yeah.
but give the attention to what is there so that everybody feels like they're getting enough of you.
I mean, it's called prep for a reason. You got to be prepared, right? You got to be prepared to go to the gym and hit the gym. Be prepared to eat the food you probably don't want to eat.
Right. You end up out and about with no meal prep food and you're looking around, getting a little skittish, like, what am I going to do? Do you feel like it's worse to go without or to just eat something that you shouldn't eat? Like, would you rather wait a couple more hours and not eat and just get home at some point and get the right foods in? Or are you going
to I think it depends on how close you are to the show, baby. And my coach is going to listen to this.
Yes, good.
I'm just kidding.
I love that. Great coaches create accountability and create trust. And you got to trust that the coach is giving you the right macros, the right calories to eat. Also, like the right amount of cardio and exercise and all that kind of stuff so that your body is going to get to the point where it needs to be, you know, in the time that's allotted for that. And that's, you know, that's hard to do. I mean, I think I see so many people just working too hard at the gym and probably not working hard enough in the fridge.
Yes.
That's usually the amateur is doing too much at the gym, too much volume.
Yes.
Not enough thinking about what they're putting in their body and how much they're sleeping and water and all those other things. Those are the boring things. The fun stuff is at the gym.
So. Yes, absolutely. And that's why I say like reverse dieting. So when you come off a show, you can't just enjoy, right? Or
That's not a good idea.
Darn it, maybe for that night. But yeah, reverse is key. And I think if you find a coach that is reversing you correctly, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah. So talk about your mindset in the gym. Let's talk about improvement season, which is my new favorite expression.
I love it.
Off season seems like, you know, you're eating pizza. But improvement season. You're walking in the gym. You're not at a caloric deficit. Like, you know, you're just locked in. You got your carbs. You're ready to work. You're ready to go. Talk about you in the gym and what that looks like.
When I'm in the gym, that's it. Like I'm in the gym. My phone is down. I have my music on and I'm just focusing on progressive overload, especially in improvement season, focusing on form and really mind and muscle. Like, what am I working right now? Why am I working that? I'm thinking of everything from what the judges said I need to what I feel I need to making sure that I'm executing correctly and progressively overloading and making sure I'm hitting those PRs when I need to hit them.
So explain progressive overload for people that don't use that.
Let's say you're doing leg extensions, leg curls. Where were you at the last time you hit it? And how can you hit that harder next time? Weight-wise, can we go up? And not like, okay, I did 10 reps of 120 pounds. Can you do 5 reps of 130 pounds? Can you do 8 reps? So you don't want to just shoot out 10 of that much harder. You want to try to at least hit 1, 2, 3 of what you did before at a higher weight.
So like if you got 120 times 10 last week, time you did the leg extension, coming back, maybe going to 120, maybe 130, understanding you're not going to get 10.
Yes.
Like muscle doesn't grow that, you know, get stronger that quickly, but having an overload point, trying to get to 7 or 8 with a little bit more weight, which is going to challenge the body to kind of grow and recover and get stronger.
Yes.
2022, is there a show you're going to do as a pro? Tell me you're doing the Arnold Classic next year. I would love to know that.
So I'm starting. I'm a baby. I'm new. Just like as an amateur, I was new. And then when I hit the national stage, I was new. And now as a IFBB pro, I'm new. I'm starting all over. Day one. I do have my eyes set on hitting the stage where I got my pro card. So Pittsburgh, I think it's a Pittsburgh pro next year. I have my eyes set on that. We are very big. And this is why I love my coach is very big on listening to the body and seeing where the body is at. And we will start prep. And if we start seeing the changes we need, then we'll hit that stage. If not, we'll take our time to get to the next. But it would be a pro debut. And then, of course, you know, the big goal would be I would love to hit the Arnold stage or the Olympia stage if that was something that. But I'm very big on let's do the pro debut, see where I'm at that level, and then go from there.
Yeah, you got to take, just like with working out, you can't jump from 135 to 225. Yes. Like you have to take it 5 pounds at a time, one rep at a time. And same thing with this. It's good to have a dream, right?
Yes. But
you got to one show at a time, do your best, show up.
And I think that's what's kind of helped me mindset wise is I'm not so focused on 10 shows from now. I'm focused on what's the next show. So right now we're in improvement season. So we're going to focus on improvement season and then when shows start popping back up, then we'll start looking and we'll hear what we'll listen to this body.
Yeah.
See where we can hit.
Yeah. I'm always inspired to see people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s still bodybuilding.
Yes.
Still, I mean, I was at this Austin show and there was, you know, a 55, 60 year old men and women out there, you know, doing their thing. I'm like, absolutely good. Yes. We rock on. Like, yes. That's inspiring. And so at the pro level, besides the fact that you're in a new kind of echelon of mm-hmm. like athletes,
yes.
there's money actually to be won, correct?
Yes. So, there's different levels, different tiers. I think when you yeah. get that overall, that first place that you get, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure how that exactly works as far as how much you get and how they
probably depends on the show.
Yes. So right. I'm sure. And then you get sponsorships, fitness modeling, things like that. I think it just depends on the show, who's there, who's watching.
Before you were a pro, you were a brand as yourself. But I think more and more now you start to represent what others aspire to be. So that brings me to a question about you as a life coach. Talk about that. I'm really fascinated by life coaching. I think there's a huge opportunity to so many people out there need support yes. and guidance. So talk about that.
Yes. It's a whole different world outside of bodybuilding. I just love empowering specifically women. I mean, in general, the community in general, especially nowadays with health, I think it's very important to deter from that stigma of the fun yo-yo dieting. It all starts in our mind. Whatever you're going to do, no matter what you're going to do, whether it's a goal, whether you want to lose weight, whether you want to search out for a career, it's going to start in the mind. When I started, my physical changes, my all came, but I wasn't in it until I was mentally in it. So for me, that's when I went back to, I was like, okay, I need to help people understand where it really needs to begin. And it's in the mind. What we tell ourselves, what we read, what we speak, all of that comes into play. So when I first started bodybuilding, hitting the gym, my biggest thing was, well, I've never been to a gym. And I would tell myself, I'm not hitting the weight that she's hitting, or I'm not doing that. And I constantly was belittling what I was doing. And it wasn't until I start like, no, I'm going to go, I'm going to lift up what I can lift, and I'm going to continuously grow from there. And so mindset wise, like, no matter what your goal is, if your mindset is not focused, you're not going to accomplish, maybe, but not without going out some down some comparison holes and negative self-talk. And
yeah, you're not going to get to be your best.
No. So. No, there's yeah. always going to be a missing component.
That is such a challenge, going to a gym and not comparing yourself.
Yes.
And you don't know their story. You don't mm-hmm. know how long that person's been working out or what their background is. And everybody's so different. I think we all just putting on muscle, like yes. people's genetics play into like how quickly they can do that.
Yes.
And there's so much to that, but we can't understand about other people. We have to be aware of what we need.
Yes.
So coach somebody who's listening here, one of our listeners, on just a mindset around daily ways to show up at the gym at your best.
So one thing at a time, one thing at a time. Don't focus on what is way ahead of you, or if you have a goal of being aesthetically a certain way, where do you need to start? What is step one? Well, you got to step into the gym, correct? Right? So stepping into the gym. Two would be nutrition. And three, find some guidance, find support, find accountability, find someone who's going to be honest with you, as well as push you to keep going and support you as you do it. Whether it's just to lose 10 pounds, 5 pounds, or become a bikini bodybuilder or a runner. Look at step one before you're looking at step 15, 50, 100. Step one, and one thing at a time. So I lead group sessions at my home. But we don't just do workouts. We do workouts. I create videos where I send to them and we touch base on everything from eating out to the importance of sleep, stress, all of the ins and outs. Your body is a whole, it's not just what's physically, it's what's internally happening. Yeah. So you have to really take into account that, you know, your sleep is going to affect how you physically look. What you're putting in your body is going to affect your physical look. So yeah, you can walk into that gym and hit it hard, but if everything else isn't aligned, it's not going to line up.
It's a big challenge because I think people want to do one thing to make themselves healthier, mm-hmm. but they don't realize what the complete picture looks like, or they don't get the results they want doing that one thing, and they throw in the towel before they've had the chance to start incorporating all the things that they need, because you can't really incorporate all of them.
Right.
Like you can't just say, that's why New Year's resolutions don't work, is you can't do, I can't eat perfectly and sleep perfectly and drink perfectly and work out perfectly. Like you can't just throw all those things in your world. They're just not going to stick.
Right.
So taking one step and then having the patience, and that's where the coach comes in. Yes. I really 100% believe what you say there is, you know, I did that. I hired a friend of mine who's a trainer to just write my programming up.
Yes.
I don't meet with him. He just writes my programming. We check in every couple of weeks. He gives me my numbers. He gives me my progressive overload so that I know that I got to come in like 2 days from now. I got to do 405 on a deadlift. I'm a little nervous and I'm excited about it, but I'm not out there guessing anymore. I'm not out there going like, how do I feel today?
Yes.
I'm out there going, I've got a number. I got to go hit it.
Right.
Right. And I think that's where coaches can be so powerful.
And a good coach and finding what works for you too. Everybody has different lifestyles. Everyone has different goals. So finding what works for you, there's so much that you have to take into account for.
And the elephant in the room of bodybuilding is you don't know what people are taking.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, you know, Anavar is a big one for women in bodybuilding, and it gives somebody who's doing that is such a competitive advantage to growing muscle and getting lean and all that kind of stuff.
And again, that's coaching. You got to also have a good coach.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, of course, steroids are the obvious kind of like thing that you think about with men and bodybuilding and these kind of massive Dorian Yates, you know, physiques that are just kind of seem impossible to achieve. And but yeah, I think we all have to just decide within ourselves. Love what you've said over and over. It's just like, you know, why am I here? Think about the work you put in.
Yes.
And what the goal is. Yes. Like, if your goal is to be the biggest human being on the planet as a bodybuilder, then you probably need to do some anabolic steroids and other crazy stuff. But if your goal is to show up at your best in a aspect of the sport that you can do in a natural way, like you're doing, like.
And for me, it's longevity. I have to think about how I'm going to hold myself off the stage. It's one show at a time. It's 10 seconds to 30 seconds when you become, you know, a pro, but then you still have a life to live. So you have to think about longevity outside of bodybuilding. For me, I'm a mom. I serve at my church. I'm a coach. I'm all these things. So I have to take an account for how am I going to hold myself accountable outside of stepping on that stage for that little bit of time that I have on the stage. So I have to think of all of those. It's work. It's everyday work. And I'm not perfect. So there are moments when I send my coach my check-ins, if I'm having doubts, that's where that relationship with having a good coach is, hey, I'm feeling this way right now. I kind of need some sense talked into me or kick me, or what do you need to do to get me out of that? And it's those little reminders back to set me back straight. Whereas before it would have been like, you know, like we said, a rabbit hole of like comparing and eating disorders and things like that. So.
Yeah. If you're in the world of bodybuilding, you need a coach.
Yes.
That it has a great moral compass and a great ability to know you.
Yes.
And give you great advice. Because there's a lot of coaches out there that will just tell you to take supplements or, you know, fat burners and all that kind of stuff. And because they want the result for you, but they don't actually want to care. They're not caring about your longevity, your body and your future.
Yes, absolutely. And you're not getting the same prep that the other person is getting. Your coach is really focusing on creating a prep for you because they know you and your body.
Yep.
Even your teammate is going to have like maybe some similarities in there, but it's still going to be different because maybe her body reacts differently to certain things.
Now, have you had your coach the whole time or have you changed a few times?
No, my trainer, my friend was my coach in the beginning, the one who introduced me to bodybuilding. And then at the beginning of COVID, there was some separation there. And so I actually almost stopped bodybuilding because of the situation that happened. I actually was at the point where I was like, look, I'm an adult. I don't need to bodybuild. And my husband kind of talked some sense into me and reminded me why I was pushing so hard for that passion. And I had talked to my coach that I have now before.
Can we give your coach some credit?
Yes, first of all?
Who's your coach?
So Casey Samsel, she's an IFBB pro and it's Team Casey, but we are now the Fit as well as Fit Femme project.
Okay.
So she's lifestyle coaching as well as competition coaching.
Awesome.
And so she leads Team Casey, but then the lifestyle side of it is called the Fit Femme Project.
Is that how you're also a coach through that?
No, I'm doing that on my own.
Okay.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Hint, hint.
Casey.
But yeah, so I'm doing that on my own. But I mean, everything she does from competition coaching to lifestyle coaching, her and the team, she's slowly growing her coaching team. There's several coaches within the FitFem project. To see what they do is amazing. And it's where I needed to be. It was a good turn of events. It wasn't fun in the beginning, but it was needed and obviously what I needed to get to where I'm at now.
Yeah. Well, we're going to put Casey's information in the show notes.
Yes.
All of your information is going to be in the show notes. Yes. So people know how to obviously follow you on Instagram, Facebook, but also reach out if they want coaching.
Yes. Yes.
Because I will tell listeners, whether it's a life coach, a personal trainer, somebody that's keeping you accountable to the goals that you have, not just for the next 2 months because you got a vacation to Cancun,
yes,
but like long-term success. We can't be doing fad diets, things like that, that are going to mess with our body short-term, but long-term are going to wreak havoc on our overall system. So get a great coach. Reach out to Roseda. She's here to help. So.
Yes.
Roseda, is there anything else you wanted to share that maybe I didn't ask you that you'd like to put out there on the podcast?
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I was very nervous in the beginning, but I love what you're doing. So this has been a great experience for me.
Really appreciate you taking the time, and I got to meet your whole family, and that was just special. So,
yeah. And thank you, Becca, for...
Yes, Becca. Becca Bold.
Yes.
It takes so much discipline to do what she's doing at the highest level. And I love that she talks about when she starts prepping for a show, she gets rid of social media altogether, takes it out of her life, doesn't allow the comparisons and the things, the negative mindset that can come from social media to seep into her mind, into her life. She gets rid of it. She starts focusing on the things she needs to do day in, day out, the little things that matter. And she trusts her coach and she has a great relationship with Casey and that whole team. And that is her secret sauce. There's nothing magic. She clears her head of the bad stuff, focuses on what she knows she can control, and does the work. All the information about her is in the show notes, so check it out and reach out. Hey, if you're looking for a coach, somebody to help you, she might be the person for it. Last but not least, follow me on Instagram at BartonGuyBrian and shoot me a DM. Give me some feedback on what you love most about the podcast and any guests that you might want me to interview down the road. Thanks so much for listening to the Mindset Forge podcast.